harder than ever. Woo!
Welcome! This is Black on Black on Black, and you are here with DJ Queen and
D-Fantastic! Yeah, 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 yeah! I'm sorry.
You know, you always get on me for how long I drag mine, and then here you are with
because,
the same antics.
Because I never get to do it. I'm always the one doing the intro.
You,
so
do your Sissity South thing all the time.
And I will do it again.
Okay, speaking of that, hello, welcome in. If you are just somehow passing by the website or just like someone told you to tune in, this is Black on Black on Black.
Let's go.
Yeah, so our show is about a Bay Area native and a transfer from the South.
The Sissity South?
Lord. As we explore the real San Francisco and larger Bay Area, finding scenes, creating memes, and being
obscene.
Yeah, man.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
What's wrong with you?
I have actual problems.
So listen to the show to find out what's going on in the city, where to find it, and to learn about the local artists who make it all. Wow.
I was trying to jump in.
Wow. Yeah, babe.
Okay, you ready? Okay. Who make it all happen? I was trying to like, you know what, whatever, man.
Hello, welcome in everyone on this very rainy,
moist.
Yeah. Doesn't it kind of give you like a creepy feeling when you say moist? Does it?
I actually don't. You know what, hold on. Before we dive into this, I want to introduce a very, very special guest we have, because we're about to get into our usual shenanigans. So as y'all know, Black on Black on Black, we love to highlight people who are truly making a fantastic impact in the community around us. So we are very, very honored to have the one, the only, Kai Kai B. Michael.
Hello.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Yeah. So in case y'all don't know, y'all were living under a rock or you just are completely untapped with the community, Kai Kai is a Bay Area drag performer, cosplay artist, and superhero, for real, with a passion for social justice and community care. They specialize in performances that are often fun, yet thought-provoking, hell yeah, or deeply emotional as a reflection of culture and their own personal feelings. Kai Kai is also a co-host producer of several shows in SF in the East Bay. They delight in always bringing something new and refreshing to queer art, and are not afraid of sharing their story with others. Thank you for being here and getting ready to share your story, Kai Kai.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to talk to y'all.
Yeah, this is going to be great. This is going to be great. So one thing we like to do is highlight some events that are happening in the Bay Area. DJ Queen?
Yeah, so there's a couple of events wanted to highlight. First one, Cosmic Light with Grad Queen Bright Light at El Rio. And for those of you who are like, what's a Grad Queen? That's the name of a person who actually won Miss Universe, I think, in Mexico.
Wow.
And yeah. So they are stoked to welcome Grad Queen and Bright Light to El Rio stage. That's happening on April 22nd. You can join the singing sensation Grad Queen and award-winning dance pop artist Bright Light. I love that name.
Bright Light. Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous.
for a night of music and joy. No. And then coming up after that, we have Garden of Sin. Wow, Seer.
You okay?
Man, it's been a long day, bro.
The barometric pressure.
Yeah, bro.
You're already kind of, you know, not fast, and so it's already being...
Remedial? What's happening here?
No, I was just saying...
What are you saying?
You're not... You know, anyway, so the Garden of Sin...
Girl, all right. Garden of Sin, queer strip club and cabaret, April 20th. So you about to get hands.
Good.
At White Horse in Oakland. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the show starts at 7:30 p.m. If you've never been to White Horse, definitely go check it out. It is one of the, if not the oldest lesbian bar, I think, in the country.
Maybe they have a lot
of really dope events, so definitely go by, you know, pay dues, pay tribute, and check out that space.
We went there.
We had a great time.
It was an awesome time.
I've also been there when they had like a black femme queer, like sort of like honoring elders event. That was really, really dope.
Okay.
And just like they ended up auctioning off like a signed jersey by Steph Curry. No idea how they got that.
That's so random.
I don't know.
Why Steph Curry?
I mean, let's be in slow sports.
They had it.
Someone had it, and that was that. Okay.
Well, also, how much do you think that thing went for?
Mm-hmm.
No, $250.
What'd you say?
Only $250?
$250. I almost threw my hand in there because I was like, what
are you doing? I'm sorry. I will pay $50 right now.
I'm going to resell that.
Immediately. I won't even wear that bitch. So I'm like, and eBay. So
yeah. It was fascinating. Anyway, support your queer spaces.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the last event I wanted to highlight, Cinco de Mayo. I like to find Cinco de Mayo events that are actually supporting Latin culture and not are just like mocking it, you know.
Of course.
There's Club Poppy Cinco de Mayo event, which is the SF Pride Latin stage benefit party.
Nice.
For those who don't know, at Pride each year there are different cultural stages. So there's also like a black queer stage. There's a Latin Pride stage, and they actually have to do a lot of fundraisers for themselves in order to get money.
Yep.
Instead of going out and putting on a sombrero, which is very racist and culturally insensitive, consider going to Club Poppy for Cinco de Mayo, which is doing a direct benefit for SF Pride Stage. It's going to be at Badlands SF, which means you know it's going to be a sloppy time, so you're going to have just as much fun. And then some of the key performances to note: Club Poppy and Valentino presents an associated SF Pride, joining forces to present Cinco de Mayo Latin Stage with party at Badlands SF. Club Poppy and why is this repeated just over and over? There will be special guest performance by RuPaul Drag Race Mexico Queen Galavaro.
Nice.
8 Sexy Poppy Go-Go Boys with DJ Jafif spinning all your favorite Latin videos, drink specials, and Y mas.
Do you mind if I plug a couple things?
Yeah, please, go for it.
I'd be remiss if I didn't.
No, please do. Yeah.
So this Saturday, I'm actually going to be at Temescal Brewery. So if anyone wants to make the jump over to Oakland,
as you should,
right near MacArthur Park, we're going to do a cute little show. My show that I co-host with Phoebe Cakes. We just lost our home at Arthur Mack.
Sorry.
So you know we're an orphan show again. This is the second time this has happened. But we're going to be joining Beefcakes for Queen's Cup. And it's going to be cute. It's a lot of like 90s and early 2000s songs.
Yeah,
so
we're going
to do a little nostalgia. We've got Artista Bomb, Lisa Frankenstein, former co-host of Princess.
Nice.
Aristotle. We have them. DJ Mama Celeste of Oaklash fame. And Floor Horror, the viral Timu Alyssa Liu, a.k.a. Angel Food Cakes, who did a number at Rolling with the Homos as Alyssa Liu.
Nice.
Went super viral, and you know she ended up on the news and stuff.
Love that. Hell yes.
But yeah, come check out that show. And also, I will be in Dolores Park on May Day with Gay Shame, and we are going to be demonstrating. I'm going to do a little drag.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
I think in general, just if people can get out this May Day, not spend money, not go to work ideally, especially if you work at like retail place or a corporate place, like. That is a general strike day. So
Hell yeah. Thank you.
I love that. That's gonna be awesome. Thank you for that. And so on to one of my favorite parts of the show, Black Dates. As y'all know, just updates that are important or should be important to the Black community. I'm starting off with something terrible.
I will say, man, we're starting off dark.
Horrible, yeah, it got real dark. So Houston raised, that's where I'm from. Houston raised singer David, who is spelled D4VD, was charged with first degree murder and the death of 14-year-old Celeste Rivas. So he's a singer songwriter. His full name is David Anthony Berg, 21-year-old artist who gained really quick fame through his viral successes on TikTok with his songs like Romantic Homicide and others. He's kind of known for his moody, genre-blending sound, and he quickly became a part of a new generation of internet-driven musicians, as we see a lot of that now.
Mm-hmm.
His rising career made this recent criminal case against him especially high-profile. So the L.A. County District Attorney's Office has charged Berg first-degree murder, with special circumstances, along with additional counts, including lewd acts of the minor under 14 and mutilation of human remains. Prosecutor alleged he killed 15-year-old at the time, Celeste Rivas Hernandez, whose remains were later found in bags inside a car registered to him, in an impound lot, basically.
Wild.
The special circumstances, basically lying in wait or killing a potential witness, make him eligible for life without parole or the death penalty. Burke has pleaded not guilty, and his attorneys have stated they will vigorously contest the charges. So authorities say Hernandez was last seen in April 2025, so pretty much a year ago, after arriving at Burke's home, and her remains were discovered months later, like in September, in the impounded vehicle. The condition of the body was really, really just hard to deal with,
yeah.
And so it took them a long time to actually figure out what the cause of death was, while also trying to examine the alleged like sexual relationship between Burke and the minor. So officials from the LAPD say the case required a lengthy, kind of complex investigation, and of course Hernandez's family has described the arrest as a step toward justice as the legal process continues. One thing that when we talked about, like when they first discovered the body last year, was like, this is really this really goes to show how problematic it is that children of color, especially like girl children, you know, young female children of color, can just disappear.
Yeah.
And like you can chase things down. Your family can like talk about, like figure out what's going on, because Celeste and David were hanging out for a long time.
Yeah, they were dating for a while.
People knew about it. Yeah. People, like his friends knew about it. Yes, like he was like always bringing her to the studio. Like people knew about it. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, why was she missing for so long before something actually like came about it? Yeah. You know?
I remember reading about how she would just go up missing a lot. And like after a while, her mom was just like, look, she always comes back. So like, you know, it didn't even flag to her as like being abnormal because she had all these behaviors that were so,
And it's hard because like, one of the things that predators will always look and search for are quote unquote wayward children. I don't like that word, but like,
absolutely.
That's what I would.
People come from unstable households.
Unstable households where you are leaving home frequently, where you are doing a lot.
Yeah.
And so like that is something that it can be. Yeah, it's just tragic all around.
Yeah. You know? I mean, the thing that's always stuck out to me is like this case has been developing for a really long time.
Yeah.
Her remains were found a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it's taken so long to even like get him into jail. It's crazy to me.
Yeah.
That he's been allowed to walk around free up until just like this week is remarkable. And I think that also shows just the lack of care that brown and black bodies sort of are treated with here. If this was a case of somebody who was white, I guarantee you there would have been someone in custody
sooner. I mean, very, very, very easily. But again, like there's a lot that kind of goes through with this case. It just can be very, very frustrating. You know, I'm glad that, I mean, we all knew it. Like, as soon as they found her body in his car, it was like, that would be such an insane, you know, like, so.
Yeah, whether it was him or not carrying it out, he absolutely knows what happened.
He knew what happened, yeah.
He absolutely, your car just doesn't go missing. You don't ever, like.
Right.
So you just didn't care about that car no more? Like, what's happening?
Exactly. If I wasn't guilty with something and my car disappeared for days, I'm calling the cops, I'm figuring out what's going on. I find it, immediately I open that shit up, I'm like, I call the cops, like, I didn't do this. So, like, it's super sketchy. It was a Tesla, too. So it's not like some weird kind of, you know, beat up,
down.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, just.
Yeah, we'll continue to follow this case as it develops and sort of report out what was. I'm interested in knowing more about the invest and like why has it taken. So what's the defense?
Yes. Found her in September. Yeah. And then like now we're talking about it. This is the first time, you know, with like actually him being charged with it. And yeah, what took you so long?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, LAPD ain't known for their
their expedience
at all.
No.
Their sense of justice, equality. Yeah. That's not what LAPD is
really
about.
Honey King.
But yeah. So, like, part of me is like, this might be par for the course, but I definitely think it's important that we keep following and talking about it.
100%. 100%. Something other terribleness. So Oakland votes to allowing dismantling of homeless encampments without offering alternative shelter. Mm-hmm. So the Oakland City Council has approved a significant update to its encampment abatement policy, giving officials expanded authority to remove RVs, vehicles from public spaces without first offering alternative shelter, so they can just take your shit. The change allows for quote unquote faster cleaning of encampments and vehicle dwellers and high sensitivity areas that they would say like are schools, businesses, residential neighborhoods, so pretty much anywhere. That's kind of what cities are made of. Schools, businesses, and neighborhoods. So supporters, including Councilmember Ken Houston, argues that the policy will improve safety and living conditions in communities that have long dealt with encampments, illegal dumping, and abandoned vehicles, particularly in working class areas. Now, there's a lot of advocates and other officials saying that the policy could worsen conditions for unhoused residents by displacing people without providing any sort of like actual alternatives.
Yeah.
Critics say that towing vehicles may cause individuals to lose essential belongings and documents, making it even harder to secure housing or services, let alone, I mean, getting their own stuff and car back, right? Others, including council member Carol Fife, raised concerns that without additional shelter capacity, removing RVs could simply push more people into tents and on the streets, deepening the crisis rather than resolving it.
Yeah, this is not a thing that actually like solves the root cause of it. It just moves it to other areas and just keeps it moving around.
Right, right, right. Yeah. As one of those advocates in Alameda County, who mostly works in Oakland, I have a lot to say about this, but I think the biggest thing, the most galling thing, one of the most galling things of this story is that they're talking about high-risk zones? Is
High sensitivity.
High sensitivity.
Yeah.
Which, I'm like, shut the fuck up.
First of all. Really, yeah.
But, like, what the business owners are doing, what a lot of business owners are doing, the like owning class are doing right now in Oakland is they're pushing for more zones to be like labeled as high sensitivity zones, right? So like it's so sneaky the way these neoliberal systems work, where they can go, oh no, we're only doing it for this designated class of areas or whatever, but then you have the oligarchs, the people with the money, who go, well, we're going to expand that category.
Yeah.
And so it goes from like, okay, these are the high sensitivity zones, to like most of Oakland's a fucking high sensitivity zone.
Yeah, right.
There's businesses everywhere.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so the classifying it as anything with schools and businesses, like how do you get around, and neighborhoods, how do you get around that?
Right.
One thing that I am personally curious about is like, what is actually a high sensitivity zone to them and not? Because I guarantee you, there are going to be some hood areas where they don't give a fuck about. But that's a neighborhood. There's lots of kids walking around. That's a school, but it's fine there. You know,
yeah, it's been like a new age redlining.
Oh, for sure.
It absolutely
is. That's creating a disinvestment in certain people within the community and allowing people to hide. It definitely is a neoliberal game of like, I'm coming up with this new terminology that's high sensitivity. There's not, well, this is not discriminatory. It's high sensitivity. Mm-hmm. When really, in practice, when you break down what's happening, it is absolutely discriminatory. You just don't want to own that shit.
Yeah, they'll use some woke language to, like, you know, make it feel like, oh, it's not so bad, and then the community won't react. Yeah. They won't call we want to kill the homeless law, right? They,
no.
You know,
no, they'll just use another word, but that's actually what they're doing. Like, they're not providing any sort of cure, any sort of solution for those folks who are being moved and destabilized within their environment. They're just calling them blight and moving them away.
Absolutely.
And then hiding behind like, oh, we're trying to protect the kids, we're trying to protect the businesses. There are extremely high populations of unhoused children. How are we protect? They are also people who deserve protection, and why are we not seeing them as worthy of that, of worthy of protection, and worthy of resources? But we are more giving that to the entrepreneur class or the owner, the owner class, and preserving their dignity. It's definitely a human rights issue, and it's interesting to watch it evolve in Oakland, where this is always kind of been a conversation around this. I only became aware of this because I felt there were people on the street kind of having you sign like a ballot to put this on there. And when it came to the security one, they were like, oh yeah, we're trying to protect our neighborhoods and things like that. And I was like, can you break down what that means a little bit more?
Yep. I always do that. I'm like, what do you, like, I will sign hella ballots. Like, they'll give me on BART, they'll give me on whatever. And
I signed that BART one instantly.
Please do not take away BART. I need that. Don't do this to me. But like, you know, I will sign it, but I'm asking questions. I'm reading through. I'm like, I gotta know what's going on. Like, they've definitely tried to sneak stuff in. I'm like, I'm not doing that.
And it's kind of like, even that whole process, because a lot of those folks who are actually out there with the ballots are people who are recently coming out of the prison system or in some sort of transient state. And a lot of them will even just tell you, like, look, can you just sign this because I get money for every single signature. I was like, how much do you get per signature? I've handed that person that money.
Yeah.
Because I just like, I'm down to support support you, but also, like, I can't support this, which is going to contribute to potentially poor people ending up in prison or ending up in the state that you are currently experiencing. So, like, the way these things are even finding their way into, like, policy is, like, really sneaky as well.
It's sneaky and it's purposeful, you know? Like, they're being very intentional about trying to hide exactly what they want to say, because at the end of the day, like, they're trying to build what they think is their own utopia, which is just only furthering creating a dystopia for many others.
For everybody else.
Like, for everybody else. Yeah. Your little 5% of happiness is weighing on the rest of the 95%.
Yeah. You know? And in Oakland, I feel even particularly, because, like, you also have Black people who are contributing to this.
Yeah.
And the population within Oakland, the Black population, is going down.
Yeah.
You see it all. Like, they are removing their own people.
Yep.
And they're hiding behind this, like, no, I'm trying to improve Black entrepreneurship. And but it's not leading to a stabilization for the Black population in Oakland at all.
If you're actually trying to help Black entrepreneurship, you need to look at the source of, like, why, like, we are not getting a why entrepreneurship is even more difficult for us to begin with. If you're pushing more people on the street, you are not helping Black entrepreneurship, because who supports us? Other Black people. Mm-hmm. Like, that's real shit. Like, when our brands kick off, whether it's, I mean, one of my favorites is Free the Roots, that, like, I hydrate my locks and stuff. I love Free the Roots. Or any other brand, like, who finds it? Us. Mm-hmm. Who supports it? It's us.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be damned if I'm gonna be fucking other Black people over. Like, not me.
Yeah.
Not today. That's crazy.
We are actually all we got.
Absolutely. When there's one Black contestant on the show, I'll be damned if I'll support them to the end. I'll be like, damn, I can't sing. Like, dance. Come on, babe. Let's go. Let's go. You got it. Let's go. Like, yeah, it's upsetting, but yeah. Speaking of other Black things.
Yeah. This is wild on here. Go ahead. This is where we get to the other
I had to break this
the
up. There was a lot of heavy shit here. I had to break some shit up. So, Hennessy is rumored to be releasing new cocktails this summer. So, rumor has it that Hennessy could be releasing 3 20% ABV ready-to-drink cocktails in June.
They're going to kill us.
So, it's three flavors. Hennessy Iced Tea, Hennessy Rita, and Hennessy Berry. Berry would bring tea. Citrus and berry flavors to the lineup. So,
they can keep them all. They can keep them all.
So, obviously, this has been posted on social media everywhere. I have to just talk the top five comments I've read on this. First one, mix mine with white Henny. I want to smell colors and toss my baby daddy across the lawn. I was like, actually, I kind of felt that.
I'm
like,
trying to be on demon time.
Isn't that like the luteal phase or whatever?
Oh, yeah. Shut up. Like, yeah. Luteal phase, and I got this citrus Henny. Oh, my nigga. My husband better not say shit. Not looking no shit. Hell no.
She-Hulk mode activated.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. The Houston is out.
Crazy.
Second favorite quote. All I'm going to say is use that protection all summer. This going to hit the streets like crack in the 80s and a Popeye chicken sandwich.
I can't.
Wrap your shit up, my guy, because it's, yeah.
You
okay.
Know, that's all protection. I was like, are you talking about a gun, baby? Are you talking about
violence? Honestly, both. Pure unadulterated niggatry at its finest. See y'all in Liver Clinic.
Facts.
Next one. Releasing this in June for Juneteenth is diabolical.
Are they really? They are.
It's releasing in June. It's in June.
Is that racist?
Yes.
It's a Hennessy.
Because think about it. Because think of Hennessy's not definitely not Black.
Okay,
girl.
But then
Think about this. If this shit drops even like June 5th, they know that for the Juneteenth parties. Yeah.
This is racist.
This is definitely racist. Absolutely. And my last favorite one is, oh man, it's gonna be a mugshot summer.
Yeah.
So I just love the fact that this is happening, because you know what? Whatever, man.
We need something to laugh at.
It's so stupid. Something to laugh at. Like, will I try it? Yes. Am I going to try the iced tea, the Rita, or the berry?
I don't know about that berry.
The berry probably going to taste like medicine.
It is. I feel like the iced tea probably has the best chance of being.
Or the Rita. But it's going to be Hennessy.
The margarita version of it?
Yeah, probably the iced tea.
I don't know if I like that.
Well, hold on.
I'm thinking like whiskey. Like if I were to put whiskey
in a margarita
mix.
I will say, the iced tea, if it has caffeine in it, we're screwed.
Oof.
Because a lot of tea-infused things have caffeine in it. That's so true. You got people up. And they drinking? Yeah, mugshot summer, baby.
I survived doing buzz balls and rock stars in college. Ooh. I can survive that.
What?
I can survive that.
Why?
Yeah, because we're broke, bro.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, I remember Jungle Juice. I think I would die now.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Obviously, the last news date is absolutely horrible. But I still had to have that little break in it.
I was looking.
But I want to talk about this. And we'll have like our moment of silence and move on to our the Would You Rather and our first segment of music. But there was a really horrible mass shooting that happened in Louisiana. So it was a mass shooting in Shreveport. Left 8 children dead. It happened during early Sunday, and what authorities say was a domestic violence incident. So police identified the suspect as Shamar Elkins, who allegedly killed 7 of his own children and 1 relative, ranging in age from 3 to 11, across 2 different homes. So 2 women, his wife, and a woman believed to be his girlfriend were also shot and seriously injured. Investigators say many of the children appeared to have been shot while they were sleeping, and the scene was bad. So after the shootings, Elkins fled and carjacked a vehicle at gunpoint, which that led police to the pursuit. And that's where they ended up shooting him in a neighborhood parish. So authorities say the motive remains under investigation, though the violence is believed to be a domestic in nature. Community members and officials, including the city's mayor, you know, describe this as one of the most devastating tragedies the area has ever experienced. Neighbors expressed shock, knowing that the violence was unprecedented for the block, while local leaders called for community support and mental health resources as the city mourns the loss of the children. It's just absolutely awful.
Yeah.
I mean, anyone would feel awful about this. As a mom, it's hard to hear and read about these things, but like when these things happen, you just have to talk about it.
Yeah.
And being from Texas, with Louisiana being right next to us, I just wanted to talk about like what the actual gun laws are in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Louisiana is a permitless
crazy
carry state, allowing residents 18 and over to carry concealed or open handguns without a permit, providing they are not otherwise prohibited from owning firearms. So open carry is generally permitted. State law preempts local ordinances and shall issue concealed handgun permits are still available for reciprocity purposes. So basically, unless you have something in particular that is against you,
you can
buy a gun.
Yeah.
Right.
And carry it.
And carry it.
Without any sort of
And of course, this doesn't even talk about gun shows, which are everywhere.
Yeah.
So if you can't get it in the actual gun shop,
you can just drive over there.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Exactly. So I did want to talk about that. This is not a fun topic. It's never fun to talk about these. We have to keep talking about it because the gun control in America is just not helpful in any way. It has done nothing, and children will continue to die.
Yeah.
And it's just absolutely horrifying.
As someone born and raised in California that has some of the strictest gun control laws, because of racism, not because we're that progressive.
Right.
Also, it's one of them.
Right. Because the Black Panthers are
open
carry.
Yeah, exactly. It's not because we're progressive at all. Please do not think that about, like, there's some very, very non-progressive things in this state. But as someone who grew up, to me, like, seeing other states that have gun laws like this is wild to me. That you can be permitless and just carry and, like, and people don't stop to think, or like our government officials are just not clamping down on this and being like, oh yeah, children are dying.
Yeah.
Like that is the
consistently.
I don't know what bigger plea could be made other than apparently shooting a CEO.
Yeah,
might move the needle, but for some reason, shooting children is not going to move the needle on that conversation.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Or burning down the warehouse of a gun manufacturer or something.
I
mean, I would never do that.
But
I would never condone.
No,
yeah.
I would never condone this.
No. I know you would never.
And
I would
never.
I would never encourage people to continue doing those things when they can.
No, I
would never personally say that I believe that you're doing the right thing.
Right. Never.
You know.
Yeah.
Never hammer down that keep fighting the man.
Yeah,
never.
We would never list the location of all of these.
No,
places.
No,
never.
That's not what we do.
No,
but I just wanted to say the victims' names, and we'll kind of have a moment and then talk about my ridiculousness. So I will add on to this though. I I knew things weren't going to change after Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I was like, if we can do this and you can still just give me thoughts and prayers, I was like, then there's no, yeah. What would stop them? Right. Honestly, it would have to be true, unfettered violence against the 1%.
Yeah. CEOs need to be getting
that would be the only, that would be the only actual thing. So the victims' names were Jayla Elkins, Shayla Elkins, Kayla Pugh, Layla Pugh, Markaden Pugh, Soraya Snow, Kadarian Snow, and Braylon Snow. Thank you for that moment of silence, guys. Mm-hmm. So we always like to get into something real funny before the actual, you know, the actual show, and then we'll play some music. So I always come up with crazy would you rathers, because why not, you know? This one is particularly heinous because it's raining outside, but would you rather, for 6 months, the only shoes you can wear are stilettos. High stilettos.
Stiletto.
Pumps in the club. Yeah. Right. Yeah. 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 So 6 months, only stilettos.
So this is like workouts. This is like.
Yes. Everything. Okay. Everything that you do. You can't wear no house slippers unless there are stilettos.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Or for an entire year, you are barefoot wherever you go.
Ooh. Apes. What?
Yeah.
In the Bay Area?
Yeah.
Am I the one who continuously have to pay to replace the stiletto shoes?
Or they'll be provided.
Oh, stilettos.
No, they're not going to be comfortable, but that's not.
Oh, that's fine. Stilettos.
You're choosing stilettos.
Stilettos. My knees are going to be toe up.
My knees
and feet going to be toe up. Every night I get in the bed, I'm going to be a hard working lady.
Could you say 1 month?
Six months. That's a long. I'm listening. I actually
enjoy going barefoot, but I'm sorry, I'm not walking through these streets and onto BART barefoot, bro. Like, that's not happening. No.
Yeah. Would I rather be in stilettos for 6 months straight or be completely barefoot in the Bay Area in San Francisco, walking down the street? That's really hard because I'm a drag performer.
Yes.
So, but in drag, I don't wear the very much high heels anymore because I've had an ACL tear. I got a fucked up toe on my right. And I mean, like, you know, part of that is preventative and maintaining, you know, like, I don't want to wear the crazy shoes because it's like, I want to keep doing this for a while.
Right. Of course.
But for 6 months, I feel like I could stand the stiletto. Maybe, and just be like, I'm sitting down every fucking day.
It's gonna be the unhealthiest 6 months of my life, bro.
Absolutely.
Unhealthiest. The only thing I will probably do is a cycling class, because I feel like I could make that work.
I could see that.
And stilettos?
Yeah. I think I could make a cycling class work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good luck on that.
And I'll figure it out. But everything else, I'm working remotely.
Right.
Sure.
Like, I'm just hitting me on my computer in my stilettos, going to my kitchen to eat, to my bathroom, to do what I need to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I'm doing the six. I can't be barefoot, bro.
I understand.
Wait, can I wrap my feet in saran wrap?
Absolutely not.
No!
If you were barefoot, no.
No. That's straight cheating. Like, straight cheating.
No one's going to explore it, because I always try to explore it, and you're like, no.
No, you can try, it's going to be
like, what if I dip them in liquid latex?
No!
In the
morning, it has to be barefoot. Foot on ground. There's no barrier.
All right, fine.
Yeah.
What if I throw a piece of paper wherever I walk?
It's like Michael Jackson and Billie Jean.
Yep,
like,
a light of square.
So I'm actually, it has to be a really thin piece of paper, though. Really thin. Like, you're still going to feel the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to protect you from anything, but I'm okay with that. Okay?
Hold on, I'm going to rethink that.
Now, I'm going to tell y'all my answer.
Okay.
I'm sticking barefoot, y'all.
Yeah.
But I'm not.
How?
No, hold on. I'm honestly just not going to do shit that year. I'm not getting on BART. I'm not doing shit. I'm going to do a lot of hiking. You know?
Absolutely.
And like, and be out in nature barefoot on the grass type shit.
Touch
but
grass.
Like, yeah. And I can go to yoga. I can go to yoga still all day, every day. Cause then I'm not wearing those shoes anyway.
That's fair.
So like, I can't, it'd probably be the healthiest year of my life. Cause I'm not fucking, I'm not going to no fucking bars.
Yeah.
I'm not going to no bars. I'm just going to drink in the house.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh
I'm sorry. But I don't think do you remember what we all were like during the pandemic?
Well, yes.
Because I do. I remember becoming an alcoholic at home.
But this is a new me, right? That was like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Okay. I'm not doing all that. And if I wanted to, yes. Like, I feel like I'm gonna take the year off to reevaluate shit. I'm not spending no money in no bars, at least. So I mean, a barefoot for me.
My worry
with the stilettos is, like, because in Houston stilettos are actually the high heel. Like, I don't wear stilettos out here because I will die.
Nobody wears stilettos out here.
It's insane. Yeah. But like, I've been walking around in general, and like, if you bust your ankle to the right, I'm 35. I can't risk that.
You might get away with going to a lot of raves too.
Barefoot, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, in the desert?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm driving to things. Yeah.
I'm starting to be convinced of the barefoot.
So that's me. Like,
maybe I changed my answer.
You know?
You're saying barefoot?
I think I don't
want to do barefoot. I don't know, bro. Oh, no. There's things you're going to have to go outside the house for. Mm-hmm.
Hand sanitizer in the pocket.
I'm going to do everything that I can to avoid whatever, right? Like, I mean, I'm very fortunate. I have people in my life who'd be like, hey, like, I'm trying to deal with this. Like,
I'm trying to deal with this. Yeah, I'm navigating life in different circumstances.
I truly don't think it would be as bad as, like, if I need to go to the garden, like, stilettos. Like, I'm not doing that. Mm. I'm not.
All right, I might join you in the barefoot. And then we can all just be like a barefoot cult.
Yeah.
Just a weird coven.
I think it's like barefoot cult.
Dancing around the parks.
What if we got like real in tune with our own special powers? Because we're barefoot on the ground all the time.
That's true. Yeah,
okay. I mean, that sounds very like white crystal-esque. But I mean, you know, it could be true.
They're appropriating something.
They're doing something.
The crystal
somebody.
Are appropriating something.
I was at Presida Park this weekend. Yeah. And like, there were like a group of older white people who were dancing around one person sitting down with a guitar, and they had choreographed steps. They were like, ha, na, na, na. God is a part of me, he is my body.
It was Presida Park?
Yeah, bro. That's amazing. I was like, whoa. And they just like, they had a whole choreography going, all barefoot.
You know, they could be casting a spell, bro.
Yeah, bro. They cast one on me because I was watching the whole time.
Exactly.
I was
like, no. You were most definitely spellbound. Like, that was, they.
They have soul songs and all of them hit the choreography on time.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the hand moves would change.
I'm not kidding. They might actually been casting a spell, bro.
It was crazy. I was there with Kate. Kate was like, I don't know what that is.
Someone said online somewhere, they have a theory that the minute that like white crystal girly started like being more popular, that the world went to shit because they were appropriating magic they didn't understand.
Oh,
and I was like, oh my God, what if
they're like talking to ancestors and they're talking to like our ancestors?
They're like, it's the wrong thing.
What the fuck?
They're talking to their own ancestors that are doing some evil shit.
Oh my God.
I know. I laughed at it and then I was like, actually, wait.
There's a thought.
The idea that they may have been talking to our ancestors. Our ancestors are hella confused.
Hell no.
How did you get this? How did you get this number?
How did you get this number?
What's happening right now?
Who sent you?
Meanwhile, my ancestor calling internet on me like, D-Fantastic, huh? No, I don't need this. Oh, all right, well, okay, let's get into some music, and then we'll start kind of diving into our show with the wonderful Kai Kai. What do you got playing first?
Jumping straight into it, this one's a shout-out for Shane Zaldiva.
Yeah!
Big Spender by Peggy Lee, babes.
Do we get any, like, weed songs on there?
What?
Because it's 420.
Babes.
Okay, never mind. I'm sorry. Never mind. My bad. I'm sorry I asked.
The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender. Good looking, so refined. Say, wouldn't you like to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right to the point. I don't pop my cork for every guy I see. Hey, big spender. Spend a little time with me. Wouldn't you like to have fun? Fun, fun. How's about a few laughs, laughs, I can show you a good time. Let me show you a good time. The minute you walked in the joint, I could see you were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. Say, would you like to know what's going on in my mind? So let me get right to the point. I don't pop my cork for every guy I see. Go in his direction. Is his love strong enough for my heart's protection? I gave him my heart. Would he refuse it? Would he tear it apart? Or tenderly use it?
Ooh, I want a ding dong daddy.
Ding dong daddy.
I want a ding dong daddy.
And we're back with Black on Black on Black. You're here with D Fantastic and
DJ Queen and
Kakai B. Michaels.
Let's go.
And in the back, we have
a live audience.
Yay!
We're
also part of our live audience.
Yes,
hello.
Yes. Hi. Hey, hi. Come hi. In. Have a beer.
Come on and welcome.
Yes,
come on
please,
in.
Please. So we
please
so we're Black on Black on Black. We're here every Monday to 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And our amazing guest today is fantastic, and we're just really excited to kind of dive into like just a different part of drag. And so just so people who are unaware, AFAB stands for assigned female at birth, so like as I talk about this, that's what we're talking about. And so I just kind of talk through a quick history of like AFAB and drag. One of the earliest moments in AFAB drag history actually happened in San Francisco. Let's go. And during the 1990s, with the introduction of faux queen pageants, initially organized as a benefit for diet popstitute, these pageants were a significant turning point in the drag landscape. So who's diet popstitute? Diet popstitute, a.k.a. Michael Joseph Collins, was part of the core of the popstitutes, a loosely organized alternative theatrical troupe that celebrated its campiness and gay sexuality, and a floating circus of drag queens, muscle boys, GG, genuine girls, and boisterous gender tweakers. So at the time of the creation of the pageant, he was seriously ill and living in a subsidized AIDS facility on Market Street. It was meant to raise money for him, celebrate his 38th birthday, and the 5th anniversary of the roaming nightclub Clubstitute, a Popstitute spinoff. Unfortunately, he passed away in 1995. The first title holder was Coco Dietitia, a.k.a. Lori Bushman, who is a San Francisco performer, host, actor, and teaching artist known for her long-running sing-along movie events at the Castro Theater and beyond. She's just really fantastic. She shows a ton of screenings, including favorites like Grease, Bohemian Rhapsody, Mamma Mia. And she's just done a lot of really cool work around the Bay. So this pageant allowed cisgender women and non-binary individuals to showcase their talents, and these pageants have led the way for Clubstitute Collective, which continued to raise funds and provide a space for performers who, at the time, were not always welcome in typical drag venues. So one of the pageant organizers for this, Ruby Tuesday, noted backlash against women in drag, including performers being fired from clubs, showing the scene was controversial, even being quoted saying, quote, "Friends who got fired from drag clubs for being women, it seemed like we definitely hit a nerve." Performer, who's very well known now, Phonique, became the first female drag queen to win a major drag pageant, Miss Tranny Shack 2003, competing against cis male and trans women performers. Phonique describes drag as self-aware performance and rejection of traditional masculinity, sometimes tied to feminist ideas. So a quote from her is drag from Bus Magazine, "Drag comes down to a sort of self-awareness, a self-consciousness about playing around with femininity." She adds that while drag fur is primarily about performance, it also is a rejection of traditional oppressive forms of masculinity, and that's part of an affinity with gay men as well. "I wouldn't say every faux queen is a feminist, but I would say that a part of them is in some way." And Elke Maravilla, a German-born Brazilian performer, gained fame in 1970s to 80s as a TV judge and playfully challenged assumptions about her gender identity. More stuff like films like Connie and Carla and Victor/Victoria feature women performing as drag queens, though their characters hide their identities offstage. The 2020 reality show Legendary was the first U.S. competition to include women competing as drag queens, for example, House of Ninja. And Dragula's actually had AFAB performers in diverse drag identities, with Sigourney Beaver as a finalist in season 4. Yeah. And then in RuPaul's Drag Race UK season 3 introduced Victoria Scone, the first cisgender female contestant in the franchise. So that's kind of like the history of AFAB and drag and kind of where we are now, you know?
Yeah, I definitely a lot of these shows I definitely watched. Dragula was one of my favorites. You're going to be very incredible.
And in season 3, Hollow Eve, one of my friends, local San Francisco performer.
Yeah. They Dragula's like, if folks don't... are looking for something alternative to like the real beauty pageant of RuPaul, Dragula is really great.
It's great. It's insane. I love it. Yeah. Yo, as a fan of horror and macabre, which you would never guess. I'm just a bubbly person.
I am. But you look at you.
Are you saying I look horrific? Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying you look like someone who follows horrific things.
Absolutely. Wow.
Everyone was like, yes.
Great. So I look like Dahmer. Anyway. So I think we want one of the things we really want to talk to Kai Kai on here about their performance and everything is because they're an AFAB queen.
Yeah.
And like there's just some things that like I personally wanted to know, and like I know you had questions as well, you know?
Yeah, I was wondering, Kai Kai, if we could start with, can you tell us a bit about your journey from Detroit to here?
Mm.
What made you pick the San Francisco Bay Area? I think a lot of folks, especially in this area, all of us here, most of us here, a lot of folks here have some sort of migration identity.
Absolutely.
And yep. I think that is definitely, especially during this time, this political time, I think we should always start root the conversation there and move out from that.
I'm a political refugee from Texas.
Yes. I always say that I am a I am also a refugee. I came here pretty much as the subprime mortgage failure was like kind of really popping off. Mm-hmm. I moved here in 2008.
Yeah.
If that gives you some insight. I graduated high school in 2006 and then went to college. I stayed on campus. Ironically enough, at a school called Oakland University.
Hey, yo.
It was meant to be. That's so it was meant to be.
You went there and you were like,
cool. Oakland University in Michigan. Yeah. I spent a year as a neurodivergent little, you know, nigglet from the hood. I was not prepared to go to college and live on campus, especially because I was very ill-equipped to be an adult at that time. I mean, who is equipped to be an adult at 18? Hell, I was 17 when I first moved in still. So
yeah.
I know, you
You're
can imagine.
Young. You're young.
Yeah, I was a baby. I was sheltered. So by the time I got to college, I'm very grateful that I did just do things that sounded great. So I took three classes. I took a linguistics class, a Japanese class, and a Japanese culture class.
Hell yeah.
And because honestly, we all love anime. But
it's the like black culture,
the black
so
community.
Right.
Yeah, we are anime fans. That is what we fuck with.
I'm trying to think of how deep in the archives I need to go before, you know.
So oh, don't worry. We're going to have a whole other episode with you on about black and anime. Crazy tangent. A professor that I know at San Francisco State University has a whole course on why, like, the black community anime. We should have her on one time.
There's a course?
Yes.
Yeah.
We should have to go.
No, we should definitely have her on.
We at least need a round table about this.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely, absolutely.
Growing up in the hood, like, you know, I definitely, like, was ill-equipped to, like, go to college, let alone kind of be in the world. So I wound up unhoused. I was kind of couch surfing a lot and ended up squatting in a house in Detroit because I was staying with a friend who had to move out because their home was foreclosed on. So I couldn't go with them. But they were like, look, my uncle can turn on the water. My uncle can turn on the lights for you. You can have the house until the bank comes knocking.
Hell yeah.
So every day I was afraid the bank was going to come knocking. Mm-hmm. I mean, here I am 20 years later almost. And I'm like, the bank would not come knocking for a long time. But at the time, I didn't know what was happening.
Right. Of course, yeah.
So, I wound up just kind of doing what I could to survive until I had an online boyfriend in San Jose. So,
yes!
San Jose, man.
Our main activity was playing Gaia Online, if that dates me well enough.
You know what?
San Jose.
I don't know what's going on in San Jose. You gotta stay out of there, bro.
You know, I wound up being like, look, I would love to, I'd love to come down there, come live with you. He was like, bet. So like, I moved in with him. He was Vietnamese. His family was hella racist. So very much enmeshed in his life that much. And you know, eventually we kind of split up. And I just kind of, like, you know, did what I could. Like, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life, but I know that California is this magical place, and I'm going to figure something out, right? So I wound up working in special ed. I worked with kids on the spectrum doing behavioral therapy, which is something you can get trained for. A lot of folks were going to school, but I was like, hey, I just like this, and I seem to be good at it, so I'm going to stay here. And, you know, so, like, I had, like, not great income, but I had steady income, which was like wild for me. I had
steady
health insurance, like a 401k even through the, you know, California Teachers Union. So
that's
like
awesome.
I was like kind of chilling for a while, and when I turned 21, because I moved here when I was like 19 pretty much. When I turned 21, I started going to this bar in San Jose. It was called Tinker's Dam, and it was you know, just diviest of little dive bars with a little drag show that happened every Sunday and Monday.
Nice.
Hosted by Angel Michaels, who at the time was a 17-year veteran of drag. And, you know, she was, like, very welcoming, very open. And the performers there, too, like, they were so nice to me. And they would learn, they learned my name after a while. And, you know, I started to know people. And, you know, growing up, I feel like many black families, you know, we had a lot of parties, we danced, we sang, we communed through
that's
art.
What we do.
So I felt like I was kind of trained to be a drag queen in a lot of ways. Between that and growing up with my mom being obsessed with, you know, Diana Ross and Whitney Houston and Shaka Khan and all the divas, the Mariah Careys. I was just like kind of trained for it. So like, you know, I was like, oh, I'm a girl, so I can't do drag, but maybe I can sing. I've seen girls sing here. So they were like, sure, if you want to sing, go ahead. I'm an okay singer. I'm a better singer now than I was then, and I'm still just an okay singer, but like
better than me. No one wants to hear that.
But I was, you know, I was vibing. I was singing for a few shows. And then one day I was like, maybe I'll try like a little drag number. And so I did from the burlesque movie, Something's Got a Hold on Me, Christina Aguilera's version. And I was like, oh my God, that was exhilarating. That was so much fun. I'd love to do drag more. And Angel Michaels, she was like, you should just do drag then. Like, if you like it, you should do it. And I'm like, I'm a girl. she's like, I don't care.
You know, you're good like, at it. Get up there and do it.
Do it. Dive bar in San Jose. Who cares?
No.
So I wound up, you know, I wound up just kind of like starting drag. And I was a cosplayer as well. I've been cosplaying since I went to college. So, you know, cosplaying since I was 17, 18 years old. And so it was a way for me to wear my cosplays and perform as the characters. Because in cosplay, you go to a con, you take pictures. Maybe you are, like, being a dork with your friends and you're being that character. But you don't get to perform unless you're doing, like, a specific skit in the masquerade.
But for
this drag show, I can put on my Pocahontas cosplay and do Colors of the Wind.
I was getting ready to ask you, like, what do you see as the key difference between cosplaying and drag? Because there is a performance and embodying something else.
Absolutely. Of course.
But because, that piece that you just said, and like when you're cosplaying, you don't do a number for everyone.
Right.
Well, you're, the performance isn't you walking around, but not everybody is doing that. Where drag, it is that.
Yes.
You're not just walking around, you are embodying and putting it on display. Would that be the main difference?
That is the main difference. And also in cosplay, it's a little gauche to be like, I'm the shit. I'm a fucking diva.
Unless your character is like that.
And you're like very obviously being in character, even then it can be a little cringe. But for the most part, you know, at a con, we all know that this is a person cosplaying as a drag or as a character. Versus in drag, the whole point of drag is to be, I'm a diva. I am the shit.
Yeah.
Like
yes.
It's an ego sport, I say. So like the ego is on full display. Whereas in cosplay, you can, like, if you're Jessica Nagiri or, you know, you're Yaya Han, then it's like diva, queen, whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
they are professional.
And even then, I've met Jessica Nagiri. Like, I've met Yaya Han. I said hi to Yaya Han. I don't know if that accounts. But, like, you know, still, they seem like nice, chill, whatever people. They're still, like, people.
Yeah.
Whereas in drag, like, you know, you compliment those, you know, like, drag performers. Then, like, the idea is that you're like, yes, thank you so much. You know, like, there's just kind of a different vibe, I think, there. But
that's
for the
amazing.
Most part.
It's funny because I don't even, like Brittany said, I didn't really think about that. Yeah. Like, I, like, of course, I've always found drag to be really, really, like, empowering, you know? And I'm like, shit, man, like, should more people be doing drag? Because I'm like, like, if that makes me...
Everyone should be
if the whole point is to, like, be like, no, I am the shit, like, do I need to do that every once in a while, you know? Like, because all of my humor back when I was doing stand-up and even now is mostly self-deprecating. But then I have you as a co-host and I can just shit on you all day.
Yeah, that's all you do. So here you are, dragging shit out per usual. Something that I talked with our dear friend Shane, who also is a drag queen and does pop-up drag.
Shout out.
Absolute shout-out.